Hey guys, this is Carolyn from Homesteading Family. And before we jump into today's podcast, I wanted to invite you to a free four-part video series that I have that teaches you how to can. We go over the safety of canning, we go over the supplies and the equipment that you'll need, and then we actually get into the kitchen together and I show you every single step of the canning process so that you can follow along. There's free downloads, there's all the resources that you need to be able to complete the canning project all by yourself. So if you've ever wanted to learn how to can, or you just want to brush up on your canning safety, go to homesteadingfamily.com/podcast-canning. Again, that's homesteadingfamily.com/podcast-canning.
Hey, you guys, this is Josh
and Carolyn
with Homesteading Family, and welcome to this week's episode of the Pantry Chat, Food for Thought. Look who's back. I'm so excited that you're here, and more so not that just that you're here with me and with us, but that you're feeling better and get going again.
I am, and I am so thankful to be here. I have spent, maybe about a solid 6 weeks laying in bed, doing nothing. So for those of you guys who don't know, I've been struggling with severe morning sickness, but I'm moving out of my first trimester of this pregnancy, and I'm feeling better, and I'm getting up and feeling good. I'm starting to do more again. Yeah. So I'm really thankful for that.
And for those of you that were wondering, because of the that follow along and are tracking because of the morning sickness, a lot of you guys, a lot of folks around us, including the midwife, thought it was twins.
Yeah, I thought it was a good possibility of twins, just with the severity of the morning sickness, way worse than anything I've ever experienced. But we did an ultrasound and it is only one. There is only one baby in there. So yay. And we
praise God. Take them as he gives them. One or two.
It's a good thing. But I am
one's good.
Very thankful to be up and about and doing things. But hey, I've caught up on a lot of reading that I've been wanting.
Yeah, you
have. It was not really how I planned on spending my summer, but I read all sorts of stuff. And it's been interesting. It's been fun. I got through a lot of Tolkien. I read Jane Eyre again. I've just, you know, that big stack of books that I always have waiting for me has dwindled way down to where I'm kind of trying to figure out what I'm going to read next. So.
Yeah, well, and you're working your way through a very interesting historical book on the Victorian age. She's always reading something fascinating that we learn something from that ultimately contributes to what we're doing and even what we share. And this Victorian age book is very interesting.
Yeah, I'm reading How to Be a Victorian by historian. Oh, I'm going to mess her name up. Is it Ruth Stout?
I want to say it's Ruth Stout. We should have had the book here, but
there are
didn't know we were going to talk about it.
Different domestic historians in the UK named Ruth, and I mixed them up, so I'm not real sure. But it is a fascinating look at the Victorian age, you know, which covers a good chunk of the 1800s, and it's really based out of the UK, but it's really fascinating that life in the Victorian age was really hard for most people. Health was horrible, and life expectancy dropped. It was just most people were starving most of the time. It was a really, really hard time because of the changes brought in by the Industrial Revolution and a lot of the things that were happening. So it's kind of a depressing look at a period not that long ago in our world history. So
any ideas, anything applicable that, like, besides the history, you know, you're usually mining for something. She's usually looking for some bits of information or some hack or something. Are you pulling anything out of this, or is this just dismal history?
Honestly, at this point, it's kind of dismal history.
Okay. But,
you know, the big takeaway is, as humans, we can actually endure a lot of hardship, a lot of starvation, a lot of, you know, challenges, and still just keep trucking along and doing what we have to do. And I think, you know, looking at our life now and the moments where I'm like, oh, life is hard. Oh, it's nothing. we are very much sissies. The interesting thing about the Victorian period, though, is that 100 years before that, people lived longer. They were healthier. The families were more intact. Mm. You know, there was a lot of good. They weren't pressing five-year-olds into full-time work. Yeah, 100 years before that, it just was not done. You waited until you were, you know, 12 years old. So it was just this real dark period, but, you know.
And that was the, I mean, it's interesting because that was the blooming of the industrial age, yeah, and what, which we celebrate and we're so thankful for all our conveniences, but it's had a lot of collateral damage as it still does. And, but it, you know what, it's a good reminder what you bring out because, you know, things are getting tougher and they're probably going to continue to get tougher. And it's good to have a reference point that you're right. We're kind of sissies. We're going to kind of need to learn to buck up a little bit. And, you know, food costs have through human history have always been higher than they are now. And so we complain about them going up, but they've been much worse. It's always been challenging to work the land, a lot of things. And so it's good to just remember that we can do this. And we actually have a lot of great tools that nobody else had to, to help us along the way.
So if you're getting into harvest season and you feel like you have long days that are really tiring, just remember that 18-hour workdays were not uncommon back in the Victorian age.
Yeah.
And that was before you went home and took care of everything you needed to deal with at home. So you can make it. You can do it. You can get through harvest season.
I think the electric butter churn and the coffee maker and a lot of other our modern conveniences are great for this homesteading life.
We'll take them.
Yep.
Good. Well, today we're actually answering your questions.
Right? We sure are, but I was going to make a mention. Sorry, I'm checking my reminders. There's so much going on. That we are going to answer your questions, but we want to remind you guys about the upcoming Traditional Skills Summit. Really excited. And if you haven't signed up for that, make sure you check out the link below and sign up. I'll be hosting. And hey, I even get to interview you as one of the speakers at the summit, along with Sally Fallon-Morrell, Angel Saladin, Justin Rhodes, Melissa K. Norris, Brandon Sheard, the Farmstead, Meat Smith, and a lot of other folks. So anyways, you guys have probably heard of that, but if you haven't or you haven't signed up yet, get signed up so you get on the email list. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on and get you all the links and everything to go to that. It's a free event, but it's also the launch of the School of Traditional Skills, where all these folks are teaching really great classes. And this launch is just the beginning. So I'm excited. I know you're excited. And
you know what I'm really excited about for the summit side of this is the live Q&A portion.
Yeah.
If you ever wanted to ask Joel Salatin or Sally Fallon-Morrell a question, like, this is your chance to actually ask them a live question and get an answer. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's this is going to make this accessible to a lot of people. I mean, all these folks do a lot of live events, which are great, but only so many people can attend a live event and travel. And so we wanted to make something where, you know, you can attend from wherever you're at and make it really accessible and have access to them live. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So check that out. Sign up and then stay in the loop. Okay, you're ready to dive into questions. Yeah.
Okay. I'm a little rusty, you know.
Well, you're a little rusty, and a lot of the questions are because you've been out on some of the videos I've done. There's a sprinkling, so we'll get a few in here.
Okay.
A lot of questions
are for you.
Just because that's been the recent content, but. I'm looking for one here. Blah blah blah. Even though what happened to Carolyn. Most of these are about the summit. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's one. Matthew Davis on canning chicken. Can I mimic your beef stew recipe using chicken instead of beef?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yes, you can. Chicken processing times are slightly less than beef times. So you can absolutely just substitute out the chicken and keep the time the same and you'll be good to go. Be very safe. It'd be good too. Tasty.
Good.
You could also do pork if you wanted or venison. You've got a lot of flexibility there. The one thing you wouldn't want to do, and I don't think it would be great in that recipe anyways, would be fish, because that has a lot of different requirements when it comes to safe canning.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
Okay, which one do you want?
We'll just work down. Yeah.
Terry M. on What I Learned, the video. I live in Idaho, just south of you. I'm assuming the sheepshaw and chickshaw is something you'll be using only during the months when the ground is green. What is the plan for the winter months?
Yeah, you bet. You're pretty right. Green or no snow on the ground. So you're right. Obviously, we have a lot of snow here. And actually, in video coming out here soon, I talk about this a little bit because several of you asked that. But yeah, we do work out of a barn in the winter. And in North Idaho, we need some space. So the animals go to grow the barn. We have frost-free bibs there and waters, and we feed out of the barn.
So what's going to happen to the sheep shaw and the chickshaw?
They'll get tucked to the side of the pasture, and they'll get braced up a little bit, and so that they don't collapse from the snow, and they'll be ready to go. I love these things. They're great. This is Justin Rhodes' design, and we're putting two of them to work, and we're probably going to do a different one for the milk cow next year, where we can actually milk out in the field. I was talking to Joel Salatin about this, and just creates a lot of efficiencies and cleanliness. But anyway, sorry, lost my track of thought, but they're just going to sit to the side in the winter. Somebody asked that too about, you know, what we were going to do with the chickens when it was snowing and the chicken tractors. Well, the chickens go to the barn as well. The meat chickens go to the freezer. Egg layers are in the barn. The A-frames we still have to just leave out in the snow.
I think something you said, though, is that we learned the importance here of bracing the inside of the roof. A little bit.
Yeah, that's definitely what we'll need to do for the snow loads here is a little bit of bracing. The shaws we might just turn upside down is another option on them. Oh. They're very light. They're very easy to move. The A-frames we've beefed up a little bit, and then we're going to add just a little brace to them.
Great.
And we'll deal with the snow. Yeah.
Okay, number two, Mary Loomis on what I learned. One question about the black water pipe system. Mm-hmm. How do you keep it from freezing in the winter?
All right. Well, we're going to drain it. That is a system that is out in pasture, so it's not made for full year use right now. And as I explained in the video, we work towards permanence. So this is a semi-permanent solution right now. Eventually, we would bury those in the ground and put frost-free bibs in, but we want to make sure they're in the right location, they're sized appropriately, they're serving us well. So animals all go to the barn, we water from there. That system just gets drained for the winter. And one thing to note, I put brass valves on because we do get a transition season and we get freezes sometimes that surprise us. That black poly pipe actually has a little more ability to expand than PVC, as do the brass fittings compared to the galvanized or plastic, which break much easier. So that brass is a little more expensive, but it gives us a little flexibility if we get caught with a surprise, you know, 28 degree, 27 degree freeze or something.
Yeah. And the next question kind of goes right along with what you're talking about here. And that is, how do you get water to your animals in the winter? The system you show does not seem like it would work.
You're right. That's out in the pasture. And again, the video, I don't know if it's coming out before or after you guys see this, but I am talking specifically about water systems because I got all these questions. And so I show you that in the barn, but we do frost-free bibs. We have one in the barn where we can get water to the animals easily without dealing with that system. That is definitely a summer system.
Good. Let's see. You want to jump down to number 11 there.
11. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Let's see. Mary Ellen, I hope I get this right, Muser, on what happened to Carolyn. How does one homestead while pregnant and sick? Good question. Something that really concerns my friends and I as we start both homesteading and families. So this is something that really concerns, and it's a good thought. It's important to be thinking about. She's wishing you, hoping you feel better soon, and just had her second morning sickness. Morning sickness is no joke.
Not a joke.
So yeah. How do you, and I think here really, we have the benefit of older kids. She's approaching this from when like our kids were little.
Right. Just to clarify, while this was the worst morning sickness I've ever had, and this sent me pretty much to bed full time, I have had very unpleasant morning sickness through every single pregnancy. And that's when I, you know, didn't have big kids around and Josh would be out working all day and would be gone. So I'd be watching the little kids and have the homesteading tasks that I had to do to get done. And I think, you know, you reference here, you and your friends, hopefully you live close to each other because the likelihood of you all being morning sick at the same time is pretty low. So it's really important to get community help where you can in those situations. And give yourself a break. You can do what you can do and you can't do more than that. You know, sometimes you have to ask somebody to bring some convenience food home. You know, sometimes you have to ask your church family, can you please make some meals for me? Sometimes you need to take the easy way out. But what I have found is that whether you're sick, you know, with a cold or a flu or morning sickness, sometimes mom has to keep going to some extent. Like there isn't often an option. And so make sure you focus on the basics at the very beginning of the day. Use your crock pot and your instant pot. Get things in first thing in the morning when you still have energy. If that's where you have a little window of energy, get things in and get the meals dealt with for the day. Maybe get a load of laundry cycling. The other thing that I really found is that doing like a, okay, I'm going to sit down, take a break for about 10 minutes, and then I'm going to get up and do 5 minutes of work. Sometimes you have to sit down and take a break for half an hour or for an hour and get up and do 5 minutes of work. Once you get going, you usually can get a little bit more than that done. But, you know, just that mindset that, okay, I only have to do this little bit or this one little task, and then I can go back to resting and to being still. Tricks like that really help a lot. But again, please make sure you slow down if you have to. And sometimes things have to go by the wayside. Things we don't want to go by the wayside, but sometimes that's the option. Hmm. It just happens.
Do you have any self-care, being that you've got a lot of experience here, mm-hmm. On the side of like helping get through it, helping your body get mm-hmm. through it? You know, resting obviously is key, but there's water. I know you've had some strategies. You've been through a lot and things are different mm-hmm. for every person, but I think you've found a few strategies over the years that seem to help that I see that you do that might help.
Absolutely. Know, some Asian moms. Especially for morning sickness. Stabilizing your blood sugar is about the number one most important thing that you can do. And if that means eating protein and some fat and getting away from the sugar and the simple carbs as much as you can. Now, I know when we don't feel well, sometimes it's the things like saltine crackers that are like all white flour that sound good. And, you know, if that's all you can get down, then go for that. But if you can have some nuts, have anything with some protein in there, and just small amounts regularly, and keep as far away from the sugars, even the natural sugars that might spike your blood sugar and then drop it way down. That's kind of the number one key. Also, if you're having a hard time with liquids, stop drinking just plain water. I know that sounds awful. Start making sure you get some electrolytes in it.
And a good sort of electrolyte, yeah.
Yeah, well,
not a Gatorade or something
Gatorade.
Like that.
I'm not talking about that. But you can get great Redmond Real Salt.
Redmond makes some great electrolytes. Yep.
And you just mix it into your water. So you're still getting the water. You're just getting the electrolytes in there with it. And that can help a ton. And that can help you stay hydrated. So make sure you do that. Think about your liver, whatever you can do to help your liver. Make sure you're not, you know, having any problems being constipated or anything like that. Like, keep everything moving well. And all those things can help a lot. But lots of little bits of food with lots of protein.
There you go.
There you go.
Okay. Here's one that you can take that is not quite homesteading, but I know a lot of people deal with this. And it's one I've struggled with for a lot of years. Yeah, seven.
Chessa Stockton on what happened to Carolyn. Curious how you try to stay healthy while traveling. It can be hard getting access to good, wholesome food when traveling. Oh, yes, it is. What tips would you give with all your recent travels?
Wow. Excellent.
That's a really good one.
Excellent question. Many of us have to travel today. I've obviously traveled a lot this year, filming all these classes. And yeah, I've definitely developed some strategies. I've had to travel a decent amount, not like this year, but mm-hmm. over the years. And so I have developed some strategies. And rest is one. Scheduling my flight so that I can try to rest well. I don't rest well on the plane. I've tried red eyes and just saying, well, I'll sleep at night. Doesn't work. So I really try to pace whatever that is. And I'm pretty particular about how I schedule my flights, make sure I can rest the night before and I can rest when I get there, you know, getting adjusted. So that you can't always do that, but that helps. Water is the next one. Lots of water. Your body just, everything gets out of sync and gets not working and you get dehydrated. So drink lots of water. The other one that I've gone to doing is, if I can't take food with me, I buy the best quality food I can. And that can get expensive in the airport. So, you know, I'll try to stage my meals. but I try to, you know, eat fresh food. I try to eat salads. I try to eat, you know, meat just as clean as I can. You can only get so clean traveling. And it costs a little bit more. But it has made all the difference. It has made a ton of difference to eat well. Yes, it's hard. You basically, I just buy the best I can find in the airport if I have to eat in the airport.
I think to myself often, what would I pay if in this scenario I got sick?
Like yes, right now, absolutely.
How much it would it be worth it to me to pay to get healthy again?
Yeah.
If I'm traveling and like all of a sudden I've got a flu or something, you know, how much would I pay to be healthy today?
Yeah.
And I try to think of that retroactively and go, okay, it's worth that amount to stay healthy in the first place and not even experience.
And I'm kind of talking about flying, but it's the same with driving. I've driven a lot, hauling animals. We've had moves across the country. And the tendency has been like, I want to get there quick. So I'm going to stop. I'm going to get gas. I'm going to get something to eat. I'm going to go to the restroom all in the same place, which means junk food. It ends up, you end up getting sick and I'm feeling terrible. And so I've worked even when driving, go find a decent restaurant. It's a good time to take a break anyways and sit down. And I mean, you know, if the best you can do is get a salad and maybe the dressing isn't great, at least you're getting some fresh veggies and meat. That's what works really well for me. Most of the bread you're going to get are junk and not good. So those are the core ones. The other things I do, I keep my hands off of stuff. I don't touch the toilet stuff. I try not to touch the doors. I use my elbows. I use a rag. Everybody, it blows me away. Everybody puts their hands on the escalator rails and everything. I mean, that's not just COVID. That's just, there's bacteria. There's stuff out there. You're mingling with people from all over the country, all over the world. So try to keep your hands off of things and try to keep your hands off of your face, which I'm terrible at. I've always got an itch or something. Yeah. So, but I found that has helped a lot. And while most of us don't like masks, I know people that were wearing masks before COVID when they're on the plane just for this, and it has helped them as well. So I don't really do that because I can't stand the lack of oxygen even with a mask, but I know people that definitely has helped in general. So leave that up to you because nowadays that's controversial.
I touch everything. I am terrible. I keep my hands off of everything.
You do. I've watched you and I'm kind of like, I don't want to bug you, but I'm kind of like, it makes me twitch. Like, really? You're putting your hand on that rail that 1,000 people touched today? I mean, you know, and I'm not like, you know, if you guys know who Poirot is, but I'm not Poirot about it.
No, you mean Monk.
Well, Monk, yeah. Yeah, no, Poirot's pretty, if you watch him, he is too. But anyways, just use some common sense, try to eliminate your exposure and stay and eat healthy and get water and rest.
There you go.
I don't know, can you answer that one?
I'm sorry, which one right there?
It's kind of a funny one.
Is there a I'm not even going to give a name on this one, but in what is it about homesteading and men needing a beard? Is it a time saving thing? Is it some kind of protection?
That's a funny. I didn't think it was just homesteading, man. I mean, there's a lot of homesteading men that have beards, but there's the whole hipster movement. I mean, they wear beards. I see even in Southern California.
But I mean,
when I've
you've
there.
Often said how nice it keeps warm. Keeps your face in the winter.
It does keep warm. I haven't had a run in with grizzly yet, so I don't know if it adds protection or not. But so I don't know. I'm lazy. I don't want to shave. And I think Carolyn actually likes it better. I think I'd get in trouble if I shaved.
I think you tried one time and I didn't know who you were.
I did. I did about 2016, actually, just before we started.
You didn't give me any heads up.
I went back to just a goatee.
Who is this man?
The first time in years. Scared you. You're the wrong guy in my house. Okay. All right.
Well, I didn't pull a gun on you that time.
Thank you. Yeah. That's right. I did. I came home unexpected once. We were in moves. That was a challenging season. This is a funny story. Actually, I forgot
it
about
was
this.
The middle of the
and
night
I had to travel. I was supposed to fly to Texas
home.
On business. And so I left and then something happened and I decided to just come home and sleep and get up in the morning. And we were in the city. We were this temporary place that we were in the city in transition and I didn't have the keys. I couldn't get in the door. And so I had to knock on the door. But you
didn't knock. I was, maybe you did at that point, but I was already standing at the door because there was a strange man walking my porch.
And she literally opened the door with a gun in her hand. I was like, well, it's me. It's all right. Don't shoot. You don't want to mess with her.
No, well,
that's just one of many.
You got a lot of babies to protect, you know?
Well, and we've lived out most of the time. So we're in the city or we're out a long dirt road and occasionally people show up and I'm not there. So she learned how to leverage the sound of a shotgun real well. Anyways, we'll tell more of those another time. Here's one for you, Patricia Farina on Easy Cobbler Mix. Is there a reason you wouldn't just put the cinnamon in with the dry mix?
No, I don't know why I didn't do that, Patricia. In fact, a lot of people pointed that out and I thought, oh, that's a really good idea. I don't know why I didn't do that. So I'm not sure, just, you know, one of those things that it sometimes takes another set of eyes looking at something to find an even easier way to do it. So go for it and just put it right into the dry mix. It will store great. It'll smell great.
Cool. Let's tackle one on the root cellar because we've got a few of those.
Okay. So. Melissa Root on building a root cellar. I have an old world root cellar like this, as my home was built in the 1890s, just like this. Dirt floor. It has mice. How do you intend to keep out vermin?
Yeah, that can be a real problem. And it's going to be a little bit of a challenge here because the rocks were actually larger than I was expecting. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping to have a little more of a tighter stack. But we're probably going to have to fill that with a mortar. I'll probably do a natural mortar or a daub. I'm not finding the words, but we'll have to fill the rocks, I'm sure, more than likely, because those are pretty large and the base will all be gravel and the top will be sealed. But yeah, we're going to have to work to seal that and then, you know, proper venting to keep the vermin out. But that can be a major challenge for some of these that are built this way.
You know, another question that I saw come in a lot had to do with how do you keep the mold out of a root cellar? And, you know, I immediately went back to some of my reading in the old time. They used to scrub the root cellar every single year and then whitewash it with a lime whitewash. Mm-hmm. And that is antibacterial. And so what that does is it creates a surface that mold doesn't want to grow on in the first place. So that's going to wear off through the year. So anyways, I'm hoping that we can come up with a system so that we can at least, you know, be able to scrub it down and whitewash. We'll see how that goes with the rocks in there.
Yeah, the rocks, that's going to be tough. I think the other side of that, because some of those older cellars were built a little bit differently, and we have the opportunity to control venting very well.
Yes.
And venting is a major strategy. It's something that's actually quite hard. I'm doing a lot of research on. Some of you sent me some resources and about how to build them, and that's great. I've got the build down. I'm actually getting ready to maybe hire a consultant for this because I've been looking for somebody that knows venting strategy very, very well. I mean, there's common, just let some air in, let some air out. Mm-hmm. But there are strategies in where and how much you can actually not only control that moisture temperature so it doesn't get out of hand with moving air through while maintaining temperature, but you can also create micro environments within the cellar so you have warmer, you know, more humid spaces up top for the things that like that, versus cooler, a little bit drier at the bottom, without having to build different rooms. So a lot of that mold issue can be handled by venting. The other side is proper drainage on the outside. We have very, very sandy soil. I'm not real worried here about drainage coming in, but if you have clay soils, if you have, you know, soils that hold a lot of water, you need to actually do French drains around those things so that you pull the water off from the edges and even drain in the middle. A lot of the old world ones would have a drain or two in the middle so that if you do get any moisture from the groundwater coming in, it pulls that out. And you can get that and not even see it, and that's going to up the humidity and the mold past where you want it. So those are some other structural things that you would want to research to help control that mold and humidity to get it to the levels that you want.
Good.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's good. I see we're getting out of time, and we've got some other commitments here. It is so good to have you back and just get to hang out and chat. You're going to slap me in the face. At least you're not going to shoot me. That's good.
Good. It's been good to be here with you and with you guys. It's been fun to be back and happy to feel well and nice to hang out.
Sure is. So we'll, Lord willing, both see you next week if all goes well.
Sounds good.
Stay on track. So have a good week until then. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Pantry Chat, Food for Thought. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review.
To view the show notes and any other resources mentioned on this episode, you can learn more at homesteadingfamily.com/podcast.
We'll see you soon.
Goodbye.